dark and I don't feel that great. But what we're going to look at this morning is look at, in many ways, of how to actually be great. And in some ways, we all want to be great, don't we? Whether it's because we want to experience something in our lives or to have the greatest opportunity or just in some way to know our lives mean something, not just to ourselves, but to other people as well. But there's often a comparison we make to others around us. And especially if you use social media and sometimes you look at other people's pictures on there and all the great things they're doing and you're sat at home in front of the fire going, well, they're having a great time and I'm here. So what we're going to do this morning, we're going to first of all try and work out who the greatest is here. And then we're going to look at what Jesus, or what it means to be great. And then we're going to look at some of the things that Jesus actually says as well. Is that okay? So first of all, we're going to just do a little bit of activity to find out here in this service this morning, who is the greatest. And I've been racking my brains of how we actually do this. And I've been coming up with all different sorts of ideas. And then I was doing risk assessments and I thought, no, we can't actually do that one. Someone could get seriously injured. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to play a huge game of rock, paper, scissors. Now, if you've never played it before, it's quite simple. You have rock, you have paper, and you have scissors. Let me get, I go, rock beats scissors. Scissors beats paper, and paper beats rock. I've got that right, haven't I? Good, because I've just done that off the top of my head right now thinking how. So, you're going to go around the room, and you don't actually have to participate, but it just means you will not be classed as one of the greatest in here this morning if you don't participate. But if you're happy with that, that's okay. So you're just going to get up out of your chairs, go to different people, and if you beat them, that if you get beaten, you go back to your chair and you sit down, you're out. And after a few minutes, we'll see who's left and we'll bring them up on stage and applaud them for being the greatest in here this morning. It's a simple but a very effective way of working out who's the greatest. So the way it works is this, because there's different ways of doing it. You go rock, paper, scissors, and then do it. Okay, rock, paper, scissors, then do it. Because some people cheat and wait to see what the other person does. I've played this game often enough to know how to win. But there we go. So are you ready? Up out your seats. Go and find somebody. Let's find out who's the greatest. Anybody left in? All right, well, we've got another less than a minute now. And suddenly it goes quiet. Okay, as it's gone so quiet, if you're still in, would you like to just come up to the front, please? Let's see how many we've got left. Come and stand up here to see who are the greatest here this morning. All right, don't get too carried away, Tracy. So we've got one, two. Okay. Look at all the, one, two, three, four, five. So you just like to turn around and look at the people who you are greater than this morning. Everybody, just give me a huge round of applause. Well done, well done. Thank you very much. Go and sit back down. You can go and sit down. You've had a applause. You can go home knowing you are the greatest in Forward Free Methodist Church this morning. Obviously, that's not a very scientific or a very clear way of measuring greatness. Because that is obviously a lot more to do with chance and maybe even a little bit of cheating going on. I could see a few people just kind of waiting slightly. But it does leave the question for us this morning, how do you measure greatness? And I think in order to work out what greatness actually looks like or who could be the greatest, we've got to think about some of the ways that people actually, like you and me, actually measure greatness. So I'm actually going to need four volunteers. So if there's four volunteers who would like to come up this morning. Oscar, you're going to come up? Well done. Rebecca, you can come up as well. Come up with your brother. Anybody else? And then suddenly nobody wants to come up to the front. Yeah, you want to come up? One more. I just need one more. All you have to do is hold a sign up for me. It's nothing. I'm not going to actually make you do anything. Tim, do you want to come up? So, you two want to come on this side. Because I'm a lot bigger than you, and I don't want to knock any of you over. I've got more than then. Okay, I've got five. But anyway, we'll work you guys together. So, one of the ways, and Rebecca, I think you could hold this one because I get chased round at Kickstart by you on a Wednesday, and you are really rough and actually quite powerful. So one of the ways we can measure, if everybody can see that, is power. In other words, being able to tell lots of other people what they have to do. In fact, you actually do that quite a lot in Kickstart as well, I've noticed. You tell me what to do, and I'm thinking, hold on, this should be the other way around. But there we go. Oscar, can you hold this one for me? If you can see that one. For other people, measuring greatness is actually wealth. In other words, having lots of money or possessions. Anybody got any suggestions of someone who's got power or someone who might have wealth that would you consider to be great?
Queen.
The Queen?
Any politician.
Any politician.
Yeah.
Okay. Boris? Okay. Anyone else? Footballers? Well, yeah, some footballers get told what to do, but there we go. Okay, so moving swiftly on. If you could hold this one up for me, well done. Another one is fame. That having lots of people who recognize them, who follow them on social media, or who have their own TV or radio show, or are a film star or a pop star, or you're just actually famous for being famous. That seems to be a thing these days, is that lots of people, they want to be famous just for being famous. And you kind of look at it and go, how the heck does that work? You're famous for being famous. But there we go. Any suggestions of anyone that you might think is would fall into that sort of a category? Kim Kardashian and?
Anybody on Love Island?
Oh, please. I'm not even going to mention that program on here. I'm drawing a line. I'm censoring that one. Anyway, and then finally, if you two want to hold this together, look at that. The final one is, hold it a bit straight. There. Personal achievement. In other words, having done something that maybe no one else has ever done before or very few people have. So for an example, who would you say would be recognized for a personal achievement? Bear Grylls,
gold medalist
in the Olympics, bronze medalist as well, because, you know, any medal, yeah, okay. Anybody with a disability and they managed to learn to walk, or even anybody in the Paralympics, yeah, that's a good one.
Chris Ryan,
okay, yeah. Anyone who had the world records? I once tried to break a world record, ladies and gentlemen. And it was an official attempt. I did it in a school. And the record was to eat 3 dry cream crackers in the fastest time possible. And in practice, I was killing it. I'm thinking I'm going to be known through Lancashire and maybe the world as the one. And then when it actually came to the night, and I was in a school presentation night in front of 400 pupils and staff and families, and the head teacher was my official adjudicator. It was officially being recorded. And when it came to it, I choked, literally choked. And every time I went into the school from that day on, the head teacher would do an assembly, and the head teacher would say, and I'm just going to introduce Ian, who is a failure. He made me feel great. I was a cracker. Yeah, you see, there you go. Anyway, so let's looking at this scale of greatness. Let's just look at a couple of examples now. So who would you consider, and you don't need to shout out on this one because it could cause an argument, but who's greatest? So a celebrity, and we've mentioned one of the names already, with 2 million followers on Instagram, or a person who serves in a soup kitchen? Who's greater? Just think about that for a moment. Or maybe this one, and this might cause a bit of controversy, the foreign secretary, thank you, or an aid worker in Syria. Who's greater? It's clear that even the values that we set for greatness can cause division among us and cause us to question, well, what actually is greatness? So what we're going to do now, I'm going to say thank you to my four volunteers here. Thank you very much. Thank you. You can go and sit down. Thank you so much. You were great. You did a great job. I'm actually going to get Grace now just to come and bring our readings for us, because this is, we're going to now hear a little bit of what Jesus has to say on greatness.
The first reading is from Luke chapter 9, verses 46 to 48. An argument started among the disciples as to which of them would be the greatest. Jesus, knowing their thoughts, took a little child and made him stand beside him. Then he said to them, "Whoever welcomes this little child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me, for it is the one who is least among you all who is the greatest." The second reading is from Mark chapter 10, verses 35 to 45. James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came up to Jesus and asked, "Teacher, will you do us a favor?" Jesus asked them what they wanted, and they answered, "When you come into your glory, please let one of us sit at your right side and the other at your left." Jesus told them, "You don't really know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I must soon drink from, or be baptized as I must be baptized?" "Yes, we are," James and John answered. Then Jesus replied, "You certainly will drink from the cup at which I must drink, and you will be baptized just as I must. But it isn't for me to say who will sit at my right side and at my left. That is for God to decide." When the 10 other disciples heard this, they were angry with James and John. But Jesus called the disciples together and said, "You know that those foreigners who call themselves kings like to order their people around, and that great leaders have full power over the people they rule. But don't act like them. If you want to be great, you must be the servant of all others. And if you want to be first, you must be everyone's slave. The Son of Man did not come to be a slave master, but a slave who will give his life to rescue many people."
Thanks, Grace. Very well read. So what we see is that even the disciples, those who were walking around with Jesus when he was on earth, are arguing about who's going to be the greatest. But obviously they're not saying anything directly in front of Jesus, but even Jesus knows what they're thinking, and maybe, you know, just is picking up on the tensions within the disciples. And they've been following Jesus for some time now, and they know he's special. They're starting to understand who he is and have seen how he heals people and can even stop storms just by speaking, and also can walk on water. So they want to know who's going to be the best disciple. And in many ways, we all want to know, out of, you know, in our jobs or whatever it is, who's actually the best. Or even in our households, who's going to get some special privileges. After all, they've all left everything to follow him. So there's two of them, James and John, who are brothers. Well, brothers often fight, don't they, and try and find out who's the better. When I was growing up, I had an older brother, and he always thought he was better than me, but then I grew taller than him, and oh, that starts a whole world of problems, I can assure you. And so I thought, because I could look down on him, I was far better and greater than he was. And so he used to punch me really hard. And I'm finding that that happens in our household a little bit as well, but that's another story. But these two brothers have a nickname, which is Sons of Thunder. Now, that doesn't mean that these are two guys that just go, "Hi, how are you?" They are two blokes who are like, "Yeah, we're Sons of Thunder." And they go even far as to ask Jesus for a favor. Because what they want is they are want him to say, when he comes into his glory and finds his kingdom is established, will they get the special seats either side of him? So he asks them a question when they ask him for a favor. And he's, to put it another way, he says, what do you want me to do for you? And I find that really interesting. Because if Jesus really is the Son of God, and what we see in the Bible on more than one occasion when people come to him, so if he's the Son of God and can do amazing things, he simply asks people, what can I do for you? Or what do you want me to do for you? And I'm sure many of us this morning, whatever age we are, have many questions, maybe doubts, maybe uncertainties, maybe fears, maybe things that we would like to fix in our lives because we feel they're broken, whether it's relationships or other things. And maybe we can't see through the fog of life's daily challenges, let alone think of what it actually means for us to be great. Maybe you're coming up to a time of massive pressure with work or with exams or just the pressure of school. Or maybe you're having to deal with problems within our families as well. And I don't know about you, but you know, there's an increasing troubled mood in the nation at the moment, the turbulence of politics, this virus that is flying around at the moment, even closing some of the schools. Maybe we're facing divided loyalties in our relationships. We worry about the future. How can we even begin to think what it means to be great when we're struggling to cope with the everyday as it is? And yet Jesus asks each of us, as he did his disciples, what do you want me to do for you? What would you say? What would you tell him if Jesus was stood before you this morning and said, what do you want me to do for you? Because I want you to know this morning, whatever it is you are facing, you can still be great. Because the amazing thing is Jesus has already done more for you and for me than we can ask or ever imagine. His scale of measuring greatness takes those four values we saw before and turns them on the head. Power, wealth, fame, achievement. His standard is that the least, as we saw in the readings, the least of us will be the greatest. When we serve someone else, we are to do it with compassion. We're to do it in a way that makes a difference to them and values them, not necessarily giving us value. Whether it's giving of our time, whether it's giving of our money, our energy, our possessions, our prayers to those who we see are in need. So why should we do that? Because we are already great. We are already God's handiwork. Look to the person next to you this morning and say, you are God's handiwork. Do it now. Now, if that doesn't put... Now, see, I get to see a beautiful thing this morning because as that's rippled out, some of you are sat there like that because somebody's just said, oh, you are God's handiwork. This amazing miracle just happened. Creases started to appear on your cheeks and you started to smile. But the reality is we are God's handiwork. Ephesians 2 says, for it's by grace you've been saved through faith. And this is not from yourselves. It's the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. For we are God's handiwork, created in Christ Jesus to do good works, which God prepared in advance for us to do. God has already prepared the way for you to be great. I think for a lot of us, the hardest part is actually accepting He's already done it, and we already are great. And that whatever we face, we don't have to face it on our own. We can turn to him and ask him for help. And so the way we can be great this morning as well, as not only accepting that we are great because of God, is also loving others the way that Jesus loves them. See, in the Bible, we see in Matthew's gospel, there was a point where Jesus is trying to be tested and tricked by a group of teachers called the Pharisees. And one of them, an expert in the law, tested Jesus with a question. He's trying to set a trap to see if he gets the answer wrong. And he says, "Teacher, what's the greatest commandment in the law?" And Jesus replied this. He says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments." Jesus puts the whole thing into context and says, if you want to be great, if you want to know what greatness looks like, love God with everything. And then love everybody else like yourself. Love God with everything and love your neighbor as yourself. Because when you love God with everything, you get a true sense of your value and your worth in him through Jesus. And you can't contain it because it flows out through your words and your actions. And Jesus himself is the greatest example of this. His love is so great for you that he went to the cross for you and for me. It was his ultimate service and sacrifice. Whatever age you are this morning, God loves you enough to send his son to the cross for you, to give his life to rescue not just us here today, but everybody out there as well. And I know there are people out there, maybe people in here this morning, who think, there's no way I'm great. But hopefully what you will have learned this morning is that you already are, because God has already made you great.